for WGTD News. I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm excited to be able to spend the next few minutes of the morning show with a faculty colleague from Carthage College, Dr. Ron Kronovich, who is professor of economics. What has prompted this invitation to Professor Kronovich, who's joined us before, is a big event that is coming up at Carthage on February 27th. An event sponsored by the Carthage Business and Professional Coalition titled Equity and Housing Development. And it explores an issue of acute concern here in southeastern Wisconsin, a shortage of affordable housing. And Professor Kronovich is going to be moderating what amounts to a panel discussion with a trio of very special guests who will all be weighing in on the current situation, its seriousness, its root causes, and perhaps some potential solutions as well. And so I'm really excited for the opportunity to be able to speak with Professor Kronovich, not only about that event, but really even more importantly about this significant concern around housing. That is not only a significant situation here in southeastern Wisconsin, but through much of the state of Wisconsin and indeed in other parts of the country as well. Professor Ron Kronovich, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Happy to have you, and I'm glad we can have this conversation. Just ahead of us talking about the issue itself, maybe you could just give us a little bit of background on your own interest in economics and maybe a little bit about what the focus of your life in academia has been in terms of this particular discipline and how that folds into the concern that we're going to be talking about today.
Sure. Well, in college, I had probably five or six different majors before I finally found economics, my
wow.
true love. I contemplated majoring in music, international studies, literature, and a couple of others. And I took an economics class and just fell in love with it. The teacher was fantastic. He made the material really come alive. He made me see how economics really helps us understand the world better on a kind of a macro level or a global or national level, and also on the level of just how households and businesses operate. And I just couldn't get enough. I was one of those pesky students that were always staying after class, asking the professors extra questions. I visited my professors in college during their office hours. And, you know, I just couldn't get enough. I really loved the material. So when I graduated from college, I knew that I couldn't stop. So I went to graduate school. I eventually earned a PhD from the University of Michigan and started my teaching career at the University of Nevada in Las Vegas. I was there for 14 years. I wanted to come back to the Midwest where I grew up, where most of my family is. And I was so grateful and lucky to find the job opening at Carthage College. And I've really been happy at Carthage ever since. It's a great school, great people, great students, and wonderful quality of life here.
One other kind of overarching question before we get to our principal topic at hand. I wonder if you could just capsulize for us what it means to study economics at a place like Carthage, and, for instance, the kind of things that the typical economics major studies, and sort of the array of courses that you and your colleagues teach.
Sure. Well, the typical economics student at Carthage College learns the basics, like all students studying economics everywhere, how markets work, how consumers make decisions, how businesses make decisions, different kinds of public policies and how they impact the economy and the business sector and households and workers. And from there, students go on to study different things depending on their interests. We offer courses in international finance where students learn about exchange rates and the huge impact they have on all of our everyday lives, and also how exchange rates impact investors' decisions about where to, what countries to put their money in, things like that. These international flows of financial capital are huge. They dwarf the already massive volume of international trade in goods, and they really have a huge impact, and there are a lot of interesting issues around that. Other students study things like environmental economics, which approaches environmental problems from the economics perspective, like balancing costs and benefits and designing smart policies to try to solve environmental problems using the principles of economics. We offer classes in law and economics, labor economics, lots of other courses in sort of specialized fields. So students, no matter what their interests are, they can find courses that really match their interests and give them a lot of insight. And our students are terrific. They're really smart. They're really hardworking, and they go on after leaving Carthage to do things like undergraduate studies or get a job. We have our former students working in banking, working in high-level positions in the health insurance industry. One of our graduates from a few years ago is working for the Milwaukee Police Department doing data analysis on crimes in different neighborhoods. Another one of our students is working in economics in a high-level analyst position in the state government of Minnesota. She came back and visited our current students and told her about what she was doing, and super interesting, really impactful. So our students do a lot of different things, and we're just so proud of them, and it really is meaningful to be teaching economics at Carthage.
That's great. And of course, as you're talking, for instance, about these real life exploits of some of your graduates, it sort of underscores the fact that so much of the academic discipline of economics intersects with our real lives, with everyday lives, and everything from what we pay for eggs to what we pay for houses to whether our salary is going up or down and so on. I mean, so much of what you do intersects with all kinds of practical matters of about the lives that we live.
Absolutely, and that's a big part of why economics is so interesting. I'm kind of a niche economics fan. One of the things I love about economics is that it's very analytical. Humans are not born with strong abstract reasoning skills. They have to be developed. And economics gives students like a lot of problems and tasks to solve that build their analytical reasoning skills. And that's just so important, because any organization out there in any part of the economy, and also not-for-profits and government positions, need people who are very good problem solvers, people who can solve problems that have not been solved before, do not appear in any published case studies, and the problems might seem intractable. But if you have really smart people with strong abstract reasoning skills and problem-solving skills, that's super valuable to these organizations, which is one reason why all of our students really do great on the job market.
Well, and speaking,
I'm a fan because I like these sort of abstract reasoning type activities because I sort of see them as like little puzzles to be solved, and I like solving mental puzzles. I'm not great at it sometimes, but it's really fun for me, and that's one of the things that drew me to economics as well as the real world practical aspects of it.
Right. Well, and of course, as one gets better at solving puzzles, presumably one perhaps gets better at solving problems, and issue that we are talking about today for the next few minutes is a problem with a capital P. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Ron Kronovich, who is professor of economics at Carthage College. And Professor Kronovich is going to be moderating an event coming up at Carthage on February 27th that is presented by the Carthage Business and Professional Coalition. It is an event titled Equity and Housing Development. And this event is designed to explore a really acute problem here in southeastern Wisconsin and in other places as well, a shortage of affordable housing. Professor Kronovich, maybe you could say a word about this event and your part of it, and whether or not you had any role in kind of the shaping of it, the invitation of guests, and so on.
So I was brought in a little bit later after the guests had already been chosen, but I couldn't have chosen better guests to be on the panel. We have S.R. Mills, the CEO of the Bear Realty Group, which includes everything from housing development and construction to rental property management and real estate, you know, traditional real estate transactions. He is so smart. He's been the head of Bear Realty for almost 2 decades. We also have Tim Casey, a Kenosha city developer, and Jeff Town, who is a high-level position in the Wisconsin Housing and Economic Development Authority. All of these people are so smart and good. They really understand the issues, and they also have a unique ability to explain them in a way that people can really understand. I met with them about 4 weeks ago to sort of talk through these housing issues and kind of come up with a plan for how to organize the panel discussion. And I learned so much from my 90-minute conversation. These guys live and breathe the stuff. They are really the experts. And I feel like I'm a student with them. I'm learning a lot from them, and I'm really excited to be a part of this panel discussion.
Fantastic.
In a modest role.
And we invite people to go to carthage.edu to learn more about this event, again, which is coming up on February 27th. And Professor Kronovich, I appreciate you sharing with me an interesting article in the Racine Journal-Times very recently that talked about this issue and quoted you and several other experts in terms of this, what some are calling really a housing crisis here in southeastern Wisconsin.
Right. Yep, that's right. So the other people quoted in the article are really smart, and I really appreciated their contributions, and I really appreciated the journalist, Caroline Neal, for gathering this group of people and sharing this information to the readership of the Racine Journal-Times to educate people about the causes and consequences of this very real acute crisis, as you say.
So let's have you summarize for us, I guess maybe quantify what this current situation is, which leads you and others to call what the situation before us an affordable housing crisis here in southeastern Wisconsin. What is the most essential data to which you point that indicates this to be the case?
Okay, so that's a great question. In Kenosha, over the last 10 years, House prices have increased by 108%. And in Racine, they've increased by 128%.
Wow.
Just in the last year, house prices have increased by 8% in Kenosha and 11% in Racine. And these are remarkable numbers because historically, house prices only increased by about 3 to 5% per year. So this is really remarkable. So these high prices make housing very expensive. But adding to the high cost of housing is high mortgage interest rates. I was very lucky to, my wife and I bought our house 10 years ago when house prices were low and mortgage interest rates were around 3.5%. Over the last 5 or 7 years, mortgage interest rates have risen up to 7.6%. In 2023, that was the peak, and they've come down a little bit. Maybe people are getting mortgages for maybe 6.5 to 7%. But that's still really, really high. Like an increase of 3% on the mortgage rate. So if the mortgage rate goes, for example, from 4% to 7%, that 3% extra makes for a huge difference in the monthly payments. The typical mortgage balance is something like $200,000. And if the mortgage rate is 3% higher than a few years ago, which is the case, then the average person is going to be paying an extra $400 a month in interest, which is like almost $5,000 a year in interest.
Wow.
That $5,000 is an extra cost that doesn't buy them any equity in their house. It's just like taking your money and throwing it into Lake Michigan.
Hmm.
It's just extra cost with no benefit, and that's just because the cost of borrowing is so high.
Wow.
Normally, high rates like this would discourage people from buying homes, and with lower demand for homes, prices would come down a bit. But prices haven't come down. They've gone up quite a lot. So we'll talk about why that is. But also, it's really important to note, in addition to these high prices, that the inventory of houses for sale is very low. You talked earlier when you were introducing our conversation about the affordability, the affordable housing crisis, and just the lack of availability of affordable houses. The current inventory of houses for sale in Kenosha is about 190, and the current inventory of houses for sale in Racine is about 180.
Hmm.
Home sales have been down relative to their historical average in both of these cities because of the lack of available housing. There's just a shortage of available housing. Now, this is really a huge problem. Everybody should be worried about this who lives in the Racine, Kenosha area, including Mount Pleasant and Summers and Pleasant Prairie, right? This is a huge problem because we are adding lots of jobs in this area, right? Our city governments are providing tax incentives to attract big businesses. We have Microsoft and Eli Lilly coming to the area, building large facilities that are going to add many hundreds of new jobs. We have existing companies like Uline and Amazon adding many hundreds of jobs. And the city officials are attracting this economic activity because in normal circumstances, it's good to have jobs expanding in your area because with more jobs, there are more people earning money and paying taxes and, you know, going to the local restaurants and shopping and all that stuff. All of this stimulates the local economy pretty well. The problem is that the people who are going to be taking these jobs aren't going to be able to find housing. In the last 4 years, the Kenosha-Racine area added 60,000 new jobs, but only 1,600 new housing units.
Wow.
And as we add more thousands of jobs in the coming years, the people who take these jobs, unless something changes, they're not going to be able to find an affordable home in Kenosha or Racine. They're going to have to look elsewhere. Where do they look? Well, they look in northern Illinois and Milwaukee. in Northern, like, let's say somebody gets a job at one of these, at the Microsoft data center that's going to be coming online soon in Mount Pleasant. That person, if they can't find a house in the local area, they're going to look a little bit farther out. Let's say they find a house, an affordable home in the Libertyville area, Libertyville in Northern Illinois. That person is going to be working in Mount Pleasant, but they're going to be driving home at the end of the day, spending their money on restaurants and groceries and other things in Libertyville, if that's where they're living, and they're going to be paying taxes to Libertyville and Illinois and not to Mount Pleasant or Wisconsin, right? So we lose most of the economic benefit of the new jobs when we can't provide a stock of housing available to the people who are taking those jobs.
By the way, I want clarification on when you are giving us numbers about the number of housing units. I think of that, you used the term something like that.
Yep.
So are you referring to homes as in houses, or does that include things like condominiums and apartments and so on?
So the data that I just cited come from the panelists. I think we're talking about single-family homes and condominiums, but there's also a shortage of rental units, too. So no matter what kind of housing somebody who comes here to take a job is looking for, they're going to have a very hard time of finding it, and they're probably going to end up looking for housing in Northern Illinois or Milwaukee. Now, if they choose Milwaukee, well, the state still gets their taxes, and the Milwaukee area gets their business, right? But the local, you know, like Mount Pleasant and Kenosha and Racine, these local governments have provided tax incentives to attract these businesses in hopes that the economic activity the businesses generate will more than make up for the cost of the tax incentives. But the economic activity is going to Milwaukee, or worse yet, to Northern Illinois.
Right.
So it's just a bad deal for us.
Right. Before we get to the causes, and there are some really interesting causes at play here, I want you to talk for a moment about the state of Wisconsin. And the article we earlier cited from the Racine Journal-Times said pretty emphatically that throughout the state of Wisconsin, or if you take the state as a whole, there is a housing shortage in place. I suspect that in certain areas of the state, that shortage is much more acute than in other areas. But
absolutely.
Could you just give us a sense of what's going on throughout the state of Wisconsin, and then in terms of what's going on in this corner of the state, is this an especially serious situation? I mean, quite serious compared to other parts of the state.
So I've spent more of my time studying the housing market in the local area, Racine, Kenosha, Mount Pleasant, Pleasant Prairie, and Summers. I have looked at the rest of the state, though, and my strong sense is that the housing shortage is much worse in Kenosha and Racine, this Kenosha-Racine corridor, than it is in other parts of the state. And there are some reasons for that we'll talk about, I'm sure.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Ron Kronovich, professor of economics at Carthage College, and someone who, as he was just stating, has spent a long time studying the state of the housing market here in southeastern Wisconsin. And we're talking about the crisis of a shortage in affordable housing that we are seeing right now in especially Racine and Kenosha County. We're having this conversation today in anticipation of a big event coming up at Carthage College on February 27th, which will be a further conversation about this. So it sounds like we are talking about escalating demand and supply not keeping up. And it sounds like there are a couple of fundamental reasons why supply is not keeping up with demand.
That's correct.
What would those fundamental reasons be? I know one of them has to do with people, for various reasons, choosing to stay in their own homes longer than perhaps they otherwise would. Explain what's going on.
So people are staying in their homes when they otherwise might want to move to a different home or maybe to a different town. But people who bought their homes maybe 8 or 10 years ago or longer, when mortgage rates were low and house prices were low, if they move, they give up their low interest rate on their mortgage. So my wife and I have a mortgage rate of about 3.5%. And if we were to move to a nicer home in another part of town, we would sell our house and we would pay off the mortgage with the proceeds, and we'd take out a new mortgage to buy the new house. But mortgage rates are now double of what they were when we bought our house 10 years ago. So we would be paying a lot more interest. And, you know, I mentioned a number before on a typical $200,000 mortgage balance, that interest rate difference amounts to almost $5,000 a year in extra payments just to cover the higher interest rate. Mm. So that is discouraging. So my wife and I are pretty happy in our current house anyways, but a lot of people who would consider moving aren't, because they can't afford a house with these higher mortgage rates. My parents live in Michigan, and they came very close to buying a home in Kenosha a year ago, but they have a low interest rate on their current home in Michigan, and because they bought it 10 years ago, and the mortgage rate that they would have had to pay on the house they were looking at in Kenosha was twice as high. And that was the deciding factor for them to not move out here.
Right. And I should just say that, you know, you actually in your example painted a picture of if we wanted to sell our house and move into a nicer house, but this concern is also for those who perhaps would think about selling their house and moving to a smaller, more modest home. Even there, in fact, maybe especially in that situation, whether or not you're going to be able to find something. I mean, will you have another place to go? I mean, that is a huge barrier for people, in a sense, leaving their homes. I mean, it's a very, very different scenario than it was just a few years ago.
Absolutely. That's right. And that's an important point that you make, because when people are staying in their homes longer than normal, those are homes that are not going on the market and adding to the inventory of available homes, right? And that's part of the reason for the shortage.
Hmm. You also talk about in this you in the article coined the term supply constrained in describing the current housing market, that one of the reasons why we have fewer homes being built is because of high cost of building materials, and even in some cases scarcity of building materials. And I think it is you in this article that trace some of that back to the days of the pandemic. Explain that.
Absolutely.
The situation, and in particular how at least some of this current situation can be traced back to what we all experienced 5 years ago.
That's right. So during the pandemic, there were labor shortages. There were labor shortages that were common because people were getting sick or people were staying home. And businesses, as we came out of the worst part of the pandemic and businesses started reopening again, they just weren't able to fill all their positions because people were staying home. Many people who were able to work from home during the pandemic, like over Zoom or something, didn't want to go back to commuting into a job. So they got a little bit picky about the kind of work that they would take, and they would only take work that they could do from home for a few years. And that's been a real adjustment, and that's contributed to the shortage of workers in construction. Right. So we've had labor shortages throughout the economy, but especially in construction. This is a nationwide thing, and it really slowed the pace of building new housing units, both single-family homes and rental units and the like, right? So there's been shortages of construction workers. You know, like you said a couple of minutes ago, there have been shortages of materials and higher costs of materials, and that is partly due to the pandemic. We import a lot of our construction materials, steel, wood, material to make drywall, things like that. We import a lot of that stuff. And some of that stuff we import from countries that were really hit hard by the pandemic and suffered a lot of loss of life and very high infection rates. And they just weren't able to produce the materials that we've been buying for them, that we've been buying from them. And it's taken a while for that to sort of get back to normal.
And of course,
those high costs of materials and the shortages of labor really, really make a difference and have contributed a lot to the shortage that we're seeing right now. That's a nationwide factor, though.
Right.
That is a nationwide factor. We have some very local factors that make the shortage worse in Kenosha Racine area than in other parts of the country.
Such as?
The people on the panel that we talked about earlier, the panel discussion coming up next Thursday, they were talking about how developers are just not buying available land in Kenosha Racine area because the zoning laws and other regulations imposing limits on construction just make them feel like it's not a profitable investment for them. So there are zoning laws and other kinds of regulations that are more restrictive in our area than in many other areas in the country. And these zoning laws and other regulations can take the form of minimum lot sizes. So in my neighborhood, the typical lot size is 1/8 of an acre. But there are some neighborhoods where the zoning laws prohibit new construction on a house unless the house is built on a lot that's 1/2 acre or larger. And you know, it's nice to have a big lot, right? But not everybody needs a big lot. Most people don't need a big lot. And it just makes the house much more expensive to build a house on a big lot. And you know, the reason why there is that law is because of something called NIMBYism. So many of your listeners have heard of NIMBY, not in my backyard. Mm-hmm. And so NIMBYism refers to this phenomenon of people in communities who want to limit population growth in their community, or they want to keep out people on lower income groups. They are behind some of these restrictive zoning laws, right? So if you restrict building houses to lots that are 1/2 acre or larger, then you're going to restrict, you're going to limit the kinds of people that can afford to move into your neighborhood, and those people are going to be high income, right? If you want to keep out the so-called riffraff of apartment dwellers, then you're going to push your local elected officials you have zoning laws or other kinds of regulations that make it hard for developers to build new rental units. And we're seeing that around the Kenosha Racine area. It's very hard for developers to purchase land and build housing units on it, whether they're single family homes or condos or rental units. It's just hard and less profitable.
The article we've mentioned in the Journal Times quotes somebody, maybe it was you, but somebody saying the politically engaged property owners want to keep things the way they are. So
correct.
for somebody that is in a beautiful home in a beautiful neighborhood,
that's right.
They might or might not be interested in seeing changes in zoning laws that might in some way affect, for instance, the neighborhood in which they live. That is part of what's going on here.
That's right. Yep, that's right. So there is, among some people, there's this perception that renters are, or people from lower income groups are, like, not desirable neighbors for whatever reason. So they're behind this this push. So that these are the politically engaged property owners. By politically engaged, we mean they they really try to pressure the local officials into making it hard for developers to build rental units or affordable homes in their neighborhoods because they just want to keep things the way they are.
We're speaking with Ron Kronovich, professor of economics at Carthage College. He is going to be the moderator for a special event that is coming up on February 27th at Carthage, sponsored by the Carthage Business and Professional Coalition, titled Equity and Housing Development, which is exploring the issue of housing shortages in both Kenosha and Racine, and through other parts of the state of Wisconsin as well. And I think in our conversation, where we've been talking so much about the escalating cost of building a home or the escalating price of purchasing a home, we haven't talked, I don't think, very much about the lag in income. The fact that if incomes were rising at anywhere close to the rate that these costs and prices are rising, this probably wouldn't be quite so big a deal. But in fact, these costs and prices are far outweighing any rise in income that that at least some of us have experienced. Just how large or significant a gap are we talking about?
I think the gap in income not keeping up with housing prices is lower than one might expect. I think the real problem here is there just aren't enough houses. There aren't enough houses, right? If incomes rose at the same rate as the price of a home, for example, and maybe even a little bit faster, if incomes grew a little bit faster than that so that people could afford to pay the high interest rates that they would now have to pay to take out a mortgage and buy a home, they still wouldn't be able to get homes because our supply is so low, our inventory of available homes is so low because developers have been discouraged from building enough supply to satisfy the demand. Right? So I think it is true. What you say is absolutely true. Income has been lagging compared to before the pandemic, for example, when income was growing at a healthier rate. That is affecting us in very real ways, but I don't think that's a big driver of the housing shortage.
It is more a literal shortage of houses. I mean, that is the more serious issue and the one that more directly and immediately needs to be addressed. In the article in the Journal Times, I'm pretty sure this was another expert who was quoted. One of the things they said about developers and in talking about the need to maybe adjust our zoning laws to be more developer-friendly, I think that was a point that you made. And I think it may have been someone else who said that the typical developer, if and when they would seek to build some new houses in Kenosha or Racine, would much prefer to build a $600,000 house rather than a $200,000 house. That was an interesting statistic to read. Is there some reason why building more expensive homes, even for as difficult as even that is at the moment, why that is more an attractive attractive prospect for the typical developer?
So that figure came from one of the other experts that the journalist who wrote the article interviewed. But I have a sense of why it might be the case that a developer would rather build a $600,000 home than three $200,000 homes. Because for one thing, it's cheaper to build a $600,000 home than it is to build three $200,000 homes. And another thing is, you know, there aren't a lot of people that can afford to buy houses right now, especially at the high prices. You know, we talked at the beginning of our conversation about how fast house prices have risen over the past 10 years or even over just the past year. But the people who can afford the high housing costs are people with high incomes. And those are the people that are going to be, you know, they're the market for the $600,000 house. They're not going to be interested in $200,000 houses, right? So those are the people who are, you know, you talked about income as a possible limiting factor. And for people in the top part of the income distribution, income is absolutely not a limiting factor. So they can buy a $600,000 home, and they probably wouldn't want affordable housing. Like, affordable housing just doesn't meet their preferences.
Right.
But, you know, extravagant housing might, or you know, just, you know, very large homes on very large lots. That's more of what they're looking for. So those are the people who can afford to buy homes. And I think that's why the developer quoted would prefer to build a $600,000 home.
What about the possibility of building a home in Waterford or building a home in Rochester? that does not solve the problem of people taking their money and eating at restaurants at places other than Kenosha or Racine. I mean, that's still, of course, an issue. But do you think it's likely that some of this shortage is going to be addressed in that sort of respect?
By developers looking in kind of adjacent communities that
right.
don't have such restrictive zoning laws and such?
Right.
That seems like very self-evident to me. But if you or some of your listeners are interested in learning more about that, we happen to have three people who really know this stuff inside and out who are going to be joining me for the panel discussion a week from tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So I would encourage your listeners to check that out. Right now, there are there are still 150 or so available seats. These kinds of events that the Business and Professional Coalition at Carthage does typically fill up within the last few days, but anybody who's interested in reserving a spot can do so.
Very
now
good.
If they want.
Right.
Fortunately, I have the best seat in the house reserved. I'm going to be right on the stage with those really smart folks, learning from them like everybody else in the audience.
Very good. One last question for you, and this speaks directly to something that you stated in this Racine Journal Times article, and this points to possible solutions. When you say, and I mean, we touched on this briefly, but I would love to have you just expand for a couple minutes on this notion of making zoning laws more developer-friendly, that could
right.
have a positive effect. What do you mean by that? I mean, I guess another way to think about this is, what are the ways in which current zoning laws are not developer-friendly, and how, in what ways could zoning laws be adjusted to create a more positive environment as far as development is concerned?
So that's a great question. The three experts on the panel discussion next week are very intimately familiar with the zoning laws and regulations in the local area that are discouraging development. I am I have a good understanding of their impact sort of nationwide in a variety of different communities, and I'm going to be learning along with you and the other people attending this panel discussion about the specific ones in the Kenosha Racine area. But in general, these restrictive zoning laws include things like, no building of any kind of housing unit within 1/2 mile of a coast, like the coast of Lake Michigan or the coast of the ocean or something like that.
Hmm.
No construction within a certain distance from various sites that are deemed important to the community. They could be natural resources or schools. You know, you don't necessarily want to have high density residential units right next to a school. And another zoning restriction that I think is in effect in the Kenosha Racine area is limits on construction near busy streets, right, to protect the children. That's an example of a restriction that I think makes sense. Like, not all zoning laws are bad. Like, not all zoning laws are motivated by people who just want to keep things the way they are, right? But a lot of them really make sense. You know, you don't want to build houses on a former toxic dump. Like, if a toxic dump is rehabilitated, time needs to pass, and it needs to pass lots and lots of tests before we can build anything on it. And zoning laws that prevent construction on land that used to be a toxic dump, make a lot of sense. Zoning laws that keep children away from very busy streets, like Highway 50, between Green Bay Road and the expressway, the speed limit is around 50 miles an hour or so. And you don't want single-family homes that have young families living along that street the way you would have them along, any given neighborhood street, right? So some zoning laws make a lot of sense. But others are clearly designed to, keep things the way they are and reduce the entrance of new people coming in, especially people in different income groups. And those really are what we're concerned about.
Right. Well, as you say, these facets of this situation and others are going to be explored in great detail in this event coming up a week from tomorrow, on Thursday, February 27th, sponsored by the Carthage Business and Professional Coalition, with S.R. Mills, Tim Casey, and Jeff Towne, joining the moderator, Professor Ron Kronovich, for this event, which is free and open to the public. But you do need to reserve a place before it fills up. And we would encourage people to go to carthage.edu, type in the search bar Business and Professional Coalition, and you will find a full article about this event coming up on February 27th, and more information on how you can attend if this issue is of interest to you, as well it should be for anybody who lives in the area. Professor Ron Kronovich, I especially appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today on the morning show to offer your great expertise. And thank you for being part of the morning show and for enlightening us on this significant and important issue.
Thank you so much for having me, Greg. I really appreciate it.
We'll see you soon.
And
bye-bye.
I appreciate all of your work. The morning show is fantastic. It's such a great resource for the community. And I really appreciate all the work that you do, getting fantastic guests and doing the prep work so that you can ask them great questions like you always do. I know that's a lot of work, but it makes the show such a terrific resource for the community.
Well, you're kind to say so. Thank you so much. Thank you again for being with us today. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on the morning show, I look forward to speaking with Jennifer Charpentier, who is the executive director of the Gateway Technical College Foundation. And on Friday, we will be previewing for you the next production at the Racine Theater Guild. It's a play called And in This Corner, Cassius Clay. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. Our weather forecast for southeastern Wisconsin and northeastern Illinois is for partly cloudy skies today, breezy conditions, and a high temperature of 14 degrees. Our wind chills at times 20 below. Cloudy tonight and bitterly cold, the overnight low 3 above. Partly sunny tomorrow. We are warming to a high of 23 degrees. Still breezy, so we'll still have some painful wind chills tomorrow. Very similar forecast for Friday. Sunny skies and 23. We climb to 29 for a high on Saturday and into the 30s on Sunday, into the 40s by Monday. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. WP.